I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high-stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep, and man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about Mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS. The second ransom deadline in the Nancy Guthrie case has just come and went. Literally seconds ago, as Savannah Guthrie, Nancy Guthrie's daughter, and of course the host of the Today Show, makes another desperate plea. It is the fourth in the family, and with no payment made that we know of, no proof of life, an investigator still saying there are no suspects and no persons of interest in her mother's disappearance. This case has the world scratching its head saying, what on earth is going on?
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
Best Guest Nation, welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. We're entering, it is day 9 of this. Can you believe it? It was a week ago this past Saturday into Sunday morning that 84-year-old Nancy Guthrie seemingly vanished just from thin air in the Tucson, Arizona area. Tonight, there are new developments. There is a new plea from Savannah Guthrie. We're going to play that for you in just a moment. There's also a new message from the Pima County Sheriff's Department headed up by Chris Nanos. We're going to break down where the case stands now. This alleged ransom deadline, if you're keeping tabs on the East Coast, it is come and gone. And if you're keeping tabs in Mountain Time where Tucson is, it just came and went literally 5 minutes ago. So let's bring in tonight's esteemed panel. We've got a couple of New Yorkers in here, starting off with David Sarney. He is a retired NYPD detective and teaches at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, where he told me most of his students, they've never heard of the Today Show because there's no one under the age of 35 anymore watching television, so they don't have a clue. Next up, you are lucky to have her tonight, Dr. Laura Pettler. She is Dr. Laura Pettler to us. She's an accomplished criminologist, a forensic scientist. She's a world-renowned expert in staged murder. She's been dealing with an ongoing power outage. So just want you to know that before anyone jumps down her throat. It's been close to a week where she has not had power, but she's been trying to stay up on the case as closely as possible. But imagine doing that without any power. Last but not least, another New Yorker, Tom Smith, coming to us, retired NYPD detective, host of the Gold Shield Show, and an all-around great guy. Let me just dig right into this, and I'm going to start with the two retired detectives. This is the latest. This just came in from Chris Nanos. He is the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Bear with me. I'm going to read this for our audience around the world that might be listening on our audio platforms. The Pima County Sheriff's Department says, we do not have any additional information to release publicly this afternoon. The investigation into Nancy Guthrie's disappearance remains active and ongoing. We understand the significant public interest in this case. That's an understatement. However, investigators need time and space to do their work. If and when relevant information becomes available, it will be shared. I'm going to hold that right there. David Sarney, not much to read between the lines there. It does sound like they have hit a firm dead end. Is that your take?
Oh, what they're saying, I always say this, what they're saying, what they're doing are two different things at times. Like, as an investigator, you don't want any information out because you keep doing these pressers and I actually brought up bringing this up. If you keep doing these pressers, who else is watching beside the media? It's going to be possibly the abductors or people involved in this. So you don't want to lay out anything that you're doing. So is this a ploy by him? Is he kind of quietly, are there things they have that they're not going to talk about? This has been one of those cases that in the beginning, you wondered how it, you know, they could lose the scene. And you saw that the sheriff talk about, you know, leak a lot of information out before. They've now realized maybe you shouldn't talk any more than you have to. Just keep everything close to the chest, anything you have. So this might be a ploy by them, you know, and the media doesn't have to know, can't know everything about this case because there are so many moving parts that, you know, right now they're focused primarily at their major lead right now is that ransom note. But there are other things they're working on behind the scenes that we're not going to be privy to. And I'm glad we're not.
Well said. And I'm with you on that. And someone said, no, it's not a dead end. They're investigating. And this to you, Tom Smith, is part two of this rather lengthy statement that just came in from the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Sheriff Nano's here. Many of you observed an active law enforcement presence at the Guthrie residences over the weekend. They were at Nancy and daughter Annie's house. That activity will continue tonight and into tomorrow as part of the ongoing investigative process, including the expansion of the search and follow-up on new leads. This is all part of the investigative process as the search for Nancy expands and new leads come in. To preserve the integrity of this criminal investigation, details of that process are not being released at this time. Ransom. The FBI is handling all aspects related to any ransom notes or communications involving the Guthrie family. Any inquiries regarding this matter should be directed to the FBI Public Affairs Office. Tom Smith, why are they suddenly letting us know that there's going to be more activity at the house? We've been seeing it pretty much every night. Why put it out in a statement? Just a let the public understand this?
Yeah, it's just a matter of putting something out. You know, the sheriff has run into a couple of issues over the past week and a half or so. So they're just trying to fuel and get as much information out there as they can. But the first one, you know, that David referred to, you know, it says in the statement, we're not going to release it to the public or we're not ready to do that right now. There is so much going on behind the scenes, Dave said. This is a really complex, all over the place case. And you can just imagine the room full of investigators and teams that are set up within the team of doing certain things. So you'll have 50 guys in there, 50 guys and girls in there. Four are doing LPRs. Four are doing leads. Five are doing evidence. Six are doing surveillances. I mean, it is a kind of controlled chaos that's going on right there. And overseeing it is probably the FBI, which making sure any sensitive information or anything to do with any ransom is really close and making sure everything gets run by them before it goes out to anybody, including the family. So this is just one of those cases, and I'm sure all of us that are on this tonight have changed our mind five or six times about what we thought this was. And it's going to continue to do that until this comes to some sort of conclusion.
Yeah, that's a great point, Tom. I'm so glad you said that because I'm included in your statistics. And now I'm leaning towards the fact that this is, in fact, some sort of legitimate kidnapping and hostage situation. Now, there's a couple of reporters that have kind of inserted themselves into this, and one of them is TMZ and Harvey Levin. He just went live a short time ago. He got one of the ransom notes, and he calculated mathematically looking and analyzing the note as being he believes that this is a real kidnapping. And you got to take this with a grain of TMZ salt. But he believes it is a real kidnapping and that the abductor is within a 60-mile radius, not 60 mile, but something like I have to go back and check, like maybe a 6-hour drive was the math. So it puts all these states in the epicenter. And I don't know, COE, if you want to pull that for a little later in the show, it's just interesting because he did see one of the ransom notes. But Dr. Petler, I promise I'm coming to you next. But real quick, David Sarney, Annie Guthrie is the daughter of Nancy Guthrie, and they've been at the house. They were there apparently taking pictures, and they made it clear, and I think our friend Brian Anton is reporting that they're going to be back there tonight. what's going on? Why go to the daughter's house multiple times? If not a person of interest, or if not a person that they're focused on.
Well, when you say a person of interest, and that thing is always arbitrary. Everybody, nobody's above suspicious point. No one's above reproach. You're doing the investigation. They're the closest people there. And it comes back to the things that the whys in my little crazy head. Why was she abducted that night? Why not two nights before? Why not 2 days later? There's a lot of things in my head I'm wondering why, because the last people to see them, the mother, was her and the common law boyfriend, husband, whomever the relationship is. So they're looking at that aspect going, maybe there's something else there that they may have that they're not aware of. Because that's where it all comes down to. So I always go to why that night. They could have abducted her 2 days ago, 2 days prior. They could have done it any time. Why did they do it on that Saturday night into Sunday? And is it because they knew that she was going to be home? You know, these are things you have to think about. And just because they're looking at them doesn't necessarily mean that they're suspects, but you have to, you know, do everything to find out what they know. Is there anything on their computers? These are things, you know, that's why the FBI forensics is going to look at those computers just to see what's been going on. Because it's surprising that nothing else is found in that house. And the other why I have is, why wasn't a ransom note left on the scene the day it happened? Why is it 2 days after the fact? Is it an arbitrary thing to try to throw this off? We don't know. And that's what is so hard for investigators to do. There are so many leads coming in. Like back in the way detectives would do these things, we have an easel, and that big easel, we put down things we did, things we didn't do. There'd be a lead book. You're putting all the leads down. And there's so many things, and Tom is absolutely right. There's so many people running around doing different things to try to get everything tied into a kind of a neat package. It takes time, because, you know, this is what happens in a somewhat rural area at night. And there's nothing forensic right now that they have other than what they see now, at least the media has picked up on, is that ransom note.
Yeah, obviously we have. Thank you, David. And we're going to play you the latest family plea, which is from Savannah, and it was from late this afternoon. But Dr. Pettler, finally to you, again, a criminologist and a forensic scientist and an expert on all things related to crimes. Just, I would like to get your 30,000 foot bird's eye view of this. And keep in mind, again, Dr. Pettler has been without power for almost as long as this has been going on. And she's got a farm with a lot of animals. So we're all pulling for you. Your take, do you believe this to be a real kidnapping / abduction hostage type situation where they're holding her against her will and the ransom to be legit or no?
Joel, thank you so much for having me this evening. You know, I am a methodologist, and so I rely on methodology to work on cases of this nature and other types of cases. So for me, I refrain from any kind of speculation whether or not it is a anger retaliatory type family member case, whether it is an actual extortion case, whether these ransom notes are instrumental or performative, or they're for the purpose of deception. I keep all of those options very, very open and utilize pieces of the information that are coming in through various sources. And in this particular instance, I'm working this, of course, with you, the rest of you in the media, as opposed to being on the inside of an investigation, like obviously the investigators are working. So for me, I don't know what this is at this point because I don't draw conclusions. And I keep in mind that the victim in this case is the map for investigators to be able to understand exactly what is happening. Why did Nancy Guthrie become a victim of what appears to be a violent crime? The simple answer is because it meets the needs of the offender. Now, that can be extrapolated into what we call some type of a conflict resolution benefit matrix, which is something that we utilize here at LPA to understand in very simplistic terms that sometimes a situation like this can be used to solve a problem. It can also be used as a mechanism for financial gain. And so those are just two of the many options that it could be. So because we are at day six, it's fluid. We're at the beginning of the investigation, but also turning corners, so to speak, as the notes that are now being taken very seriously are marking certain milestones within the investigation. I still leave it very, very open, because failing to consider alternatives paints you into a corner very quickly. Assigning a typology would also paint you into a corner very quickly. And like you said, everyone has changed their mind five times already in 6 days. So we just have to remain open-minded right now when analyzing this victim.
Yeah. And Laura, I just wanted to follow that up because I made you wait. So now I owe you. But we had Phil Ramos on the show, who's a Las Vegas homicide detective, very experienced. And he said, look, it could be, likely is Occam's razor, which is the likeliest or simplest could be the answer. And he said it could be something as simple as a home invasion gone wrong. Something mm-hmm. tragic happened, and now they're trying to cover it up with the idea that it's a kidnapping or a hostage That's situation right. here. You agree with that, I assume?
I agree that you can keep that idea open. I think there's also victimology to support what David was talking about earlier about David, you were asking the question of, you know, why Nancy Guthrie, why on Saturday night? And, you know, my first level response to all questions of why is the body in that place? Why is the firearm in that place? Why is it 8 o'clock at night when this happened? Why is it a Saturday night? And all the first level answer is always the same, because it meets the needs of the offender. Why does it meet the needs of the offender is the second. And what are the needs of the offender is the third. So once we start tiering these types of questions and getting them structured, then we can really, really start to understand how, why, and what happened from the standpoint of Nancy Guthrie appearing to be a victim of violent crime at some level. What type of violent crime is yet to be determined, beyond the fact that we know she's completely gone and definitely endangered at very minimum. She is a vulnerable adult at her age. I take care of my 89-year-old uncle. I completely relate to caring for loved ones in their golden years and all of the layers of care that people in that age group require. So it's very, very important to keep even more open-mindedness in this situation and focus on victimology as the core and compare everything, the crime scene, the digital evidence, all of other types of evidence, any type of evidence that you get, you compare it back to the victim, because until you understand the victim, you will not understand the crime scene. And that's just two pieces of a very large pie that we have to assemble here into one whole.
Very interesting. And I'll come back to you if you guys missed that. She just said, until you understand the victim, you won't understand the crime scene. It might sound like a simple sentence, but it is complex in its nature. And we'll come back to that. But David Sarney, there was a super chat from Sophia Chowdhury. Thank you, Sophia. It has been reported that the searches at Annie Guthrie's house were consensual. They said, hey, can we come in and take some pictures? And they said, yeah, sure. Take photos. Which does not sound like a guilty person to me, although that's been out there as well. But the question was, is that a problem if for some reason this goes to trial and for some reason they're in any way connected? Does it have to be something more than just a consensual search, David Sarney? I know it's a little out of the perimeter of what we're talking about right now, and then we're going to get to the video, but your take on that.
Well, anytime you want to get it'd be best to get a search warrant. But if you get consent, and the thing about consent to search warrants or consent to search, it could always be revoked. So how we would make sure that was a consensual search, we would, and Tom remembers it, we'd have them write out, I consent to search this area. And they could always rescind that. And then you have to stop, and then you have to get a search warrant. But we've seen people involved, you know, I will do everything to cooperate. Maybe that's, you know, this, you can't. rule out anything until you have to. Like I said, anytime we open a door with a question, we got to close it with an answer. That's how we kind of look. I look at cases and look at investigations. And there's a lot of questions out there and very few closings. So until they do that, everybody is going to be looked at. And a victimology, absolutely, the doctor is right. You should know everything that person does every day. You know, they go to church on Sunday. What do they do during the week? Everything about them should be part of that investigation, because somewhere along the line, either a tertiary contact or a personal contact knew she was going to be home at that date and time. So you have to look at it that way, too.
Yeah. Incredible panel. If you guys don't know, we do this Monday through Thursday every night of the week, even when a huge case is not breaking. We do have the best guests in true crime. It is not a tagline. It is our reality. We do it day in, day out on the biggest cases. And obviously, there is no bigger case than this right now. On the way in, please hit the like and subscribe button. We've also got a Patreon. A lot of people were asking me, hey, what do you think? I'm just a dummy that hosts the show. But the COE made me put out a video, and it's on Patreon right now with my thoughts. And I'm bringing my mom. My mom is my co-host on Fridays, 86 years young. She is the youngest, oldest true crime podcaster in all the world. She'll join me this Friday, whether or not she agrees to. And she'll give you your take with 40 years experienced as a licensed therapist. And she is a child Holocaust survivor, which is why this show is called Surviving the Survivor, because I'm always trying to survive her, giving me life lessons. That was a very long way of getting to Tom Smith. Tom Smith, I'm going to play this video in a second, but another $64,000 question. Why have we seen zero proof of life? If this is a real kidnapping, why haven't they given us some indication, which is what the Guthries have been asking for, that this woman is alive and, I don't know, well, but at least alive?
Well, I'm going to actually split this answer in two, unfortunately. One, we don't know if a proof of life has been given yet. And I don't think they would release that if they had, because that's a big sensitive piece of evidence that they'll have to comb through, because you can get so much from that. So I don't think they would put that out even if they had it. And from the subsequent videos that you're talking about, I don't even think there's been any communication with whoever is involved in this. It seems to be just a one-sided thing of these letters and communications going to these news outlets. And one of the main things about this, I'm just, you know, not to draw a conclusion, but it seems kind of amateurish and not knowing, like Laura said, you know, knowing your victim, even on the perpetrator side. I mean, if I'm grabbing Savannah Guthrie's mom, the first people I'm in contact with is NBC, not TMZ. You know, so that's, you know, that's a little concerning too, of why TMZ and not the mothership, pretty much, of something you would want to get if you're looking for a ransom.
You know what, Tom, that is an amazing point. Such an obvious one, no offense to you, but I've not made it. And I really haven't heard many people say that, if any, exactly. Like, if you know who this person is, why the hell are you going to Harvey Levin or Levin? Right. You should be going to, like you said, the mothership, directly to NBC News, saying, hey, you know, here are our demands. So, I mean, that's a great point. So, I mean, just to follow up on that, I mean, Tom, if it is legit, does it tell you that these are just amateur clowns at work here?
Well, one of the, again, keeping an open mind like we have for 9 days. But one of the things that I just came up with, especially when the timeline came out, that 40 minutes inside the house of approximate times, most kidnappings, Dave, you know this too, Laura, you know it too, are quick. Get them, get out, get somewhere where no one's going to see you and start the process. The longer they have a victim, any kidnapper, the better chance it has for law enforcement tracking you down. They want a communication opened up. Here's the ransom. Here's how we're going to do it. Get it to me. Here's your body back. We're done. That's the way most kidnappings take place. So what I'm getting at is, with the time frame, I actually think the kidnapping was a secondary thought. I think they went there for some reason, whether it was a burglary, a robbery, whatever, an intimidating thing, who knows? Something happened in those 40 minutes that changed the game. And these guys went, all right, we can't leave her here. Did she recognize them? Did she know them from somewhere that they said, okay, we can't leave? You know, now she's got an injury. Now we got to take her with her, with us. Now you have the couple of days before anything said that these guys are probably sitting around going, what are we going to do? How are we going to do this? And TMZ popping into your head. All right, whatever, you know, but I just think this was a secondary event that took place with Grabner.
Yeah. It sounds like, I mean, if this is, by the way, we're getting people screaming at us. It is not a kidnapping. Let me, first of all, just tell you guys right here, you got like 90 years of experience in law enforcement and solving crimes. That's number one. Number two, if you know the answer, call the Pima County Sheriffs. No one knows for sure what's going on here. You can be passionate about it, but please, this channel is all about respecting the victims and respecting my guests. But I always say best guests, better community. And we do have the best community in all the YouTubes. Without further ado, this is Savannah Guthrie from today. And it's notable. She looks different. She's wearing makeup from one. The FBI just released this from the FBI. The FBI is not aware of any continued communication between the Guthrie family and suspected kidnappers, nor have we identified a suspect or person of interest in this case at this time. So let's just go. COE, put that back up for me, please. COE, by the way, is the chief of everything. She is my wife, former CBS News correspondent. Laura, let me just go to you. The FBI is not aware of any continued communication between the Guthrie family and suspected kidnappers. They haven't identified a suspect. They're echoing essentially what Pima County sheriffs are saying. What does this tell you here? There's no communication going on.
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep, and man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
They're basically wanting everyone to know where they stand and what they're doing. And, you know, it appears that they're in charge as they should be in this case. You know, for the vast number of resources that they are able to bring in, and just the way that they have analysts that can compare and contrast communication that goes on between the suspected kidnappers and the Guthrie family, all of that is very important. So the public is going to be wanting to know, is there any communication? Is something else going on? And so I think the position of the FBI is similar to the sheriff at this point, where, you know, we will let you know if something is going on. And, you know, we all know that the three of us that have worked in this field for a very long time, and me from the DA's office standpoint, I can tell you that what's going on inside an investigation is not what's being broadcast in the media at any level. Mm-hmm. I can literally remember, you know, standing there in my office and watching a television of what is being broadcast literally directly outside the courthouse and what is going on inside the DA's office is 100% different.
Yeah. There is definitely a divide between the media and law enforcement. We try to, as a media guy, I'm saying we try to get it right, but there are tons of misinformation. Tom Smith, before I play this video that I was just about to play before we got the FBI statement, what are the chances it's extortion by someone who didn't take her? So there's no proof of life, which brings in another variable.
Listen, that's another, let's chalk that up on the board as well. I mean, you know, that's what all of us are saying. We could come up, we could sit on your show, Joel, for the next 3 hours and come up with 3 hours of guesses and maybes and conclusions. And we just don't know. You know, it's sad to say, but we're basically in the same spot we were 10 days ago. As soon as this happened, we're pretty much in the same spot. We're guessing what's going on and where we're at and what's going to be next. And that's the whole thing with this. And we've been dealing with it for so long of, you know, you think you got one line and then something else happens and you think it's proceeding in a certain way. And then something seems to fall apart with the negotiation. And that's why this is such a just circus of a case, because, and I feel for the detectives, investigators, and sheriffs there, because they are probably pounding their head against a wall, because every time they think they're getting somewhere, something falls apart. And that is the most frustrating thing when you're dealing with such a complex case like this.
Big thanks. Golden Creator is a new member here, and damn happy to be here, which I love that name. Also a new member. Shout out to them. Heather, I'll just leave it at Heather. David Sarney, why are the investigators so active in the evening and overnight? It is strange. Every time we go on air at 7, this seems to be when there's a flood of information and investigators are out on scene. Is there any rhyme or reason, or is it just coincidence?
It'd be coincidence. You know, what you're doing now, I'll tell you this, when you sit down on these major cases, you've got detectives banging their heads. You've got bosses talking. They're looking at things that they've done, looking at things they have missed. So it could be a flurry of things happening at one moment. We got to do this now. It could be because of personnel and manpower issues where they don't have availability right away during the day. So they have guys coming in for the later tour. You have to understand that right now, this seems to be a 24/7 operation. And you've got detectives, investigators, and analysts working every angle that you can. And that's the thing about this case. That's why you have shows like this where you actually bang heads, bang ideas off each other, and then figure out, can we? And that's why you go back to the answer. You throw out a question, can you answer it with a fact? And that's what you're looking to do. And they're still doing that, at least that from what we see on the outside. On the inside, you're hoping the analysts that have gotten any forensic evidence, which is usually cell phone sites, cell phone coverage. You know, these are things they should have been looking at before. They just grabbed the camera off the property right a few hours ago earlier. So they went to the septic tank. They missed that too. So there's a lot of things that were missed and they have to go back to. So that might be because of an afternoon tour coming in and doing the work that was not done during the day.
Without further ado, 30 minutes into the show, we're getting to today's video. This is what Savannah Guthrie, I'm sure with the help of law enforcement, put out a short time ago. It's interesting to note she is wearing makeup here. She looks a little more collected. I don't know what that says, but Dr. Pettler will come to you right afterwards for some breakdown and analysis of this.
Hi there, everybody. I wanted to come on and just share a few thoughts as we enter into another week of this nightmare. I just want to say, first of all, thank you so much for all of the prayers and the love that we have felt, my sister and brother and I, and that our mom has felt, because we believe that somehow, some way, she is feeling these prayers and that God is lifting her even in this moment and in this darkest place. We believe our mom is still out there. We need your help. Law enforcement is working tirelessly around the clock, trying to bring her home, trying to find her. She was taken and we don't know where. And we need your help. So I'm coming on just to ask you, not just for your prayers, but no matter where you are, even if you're far from Tucson, if you see anything, if you hear anything, if there's anything at all that seems strange to you, that you report to law enforcement. We are at an hour of desperation. And we need your help.
I'm going to play without sound now, but Dr. Pettler, we are at an hour of desperation and we need your help. We are entering into another week of this nightmare. My mom feels these prayers somehow, some way. How do you read this?
You know, I think that it there's a few different things going on. I think one of them is that investigators are expanding. And I think that we're seeing that in various ways. Not only are we seeing it with Savannah's video here, but we're also seeing it based on what they're talking about, what the sheriff mentioned about going back out. There's going to be other types of investigations going on related to what David said a little while ago. Also, you know, there's still pressure being applied. I think that there's some level of pressure here, demonstrative of the fact that she's saying, if you see anything, if something looks strange to you, you know, please call it in. So she's still putting pressure, pushing back against the alleged kidnappers, demonstrating that, you know, we're not giving up. But it's also important to say, to mention what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that this case is cold. That's one thing that it doesn't mean to me. It doesn't mean that they're out of leads. It doesn't mean that they're changing course. It's basically signaling that this is more about witnesses and more about trying to move the investigation forward in a broader manner. And she's asking for help. She is put together. She's demonstrating that she is strong. That's another thing I think that this conveys. And she wants them to know, yes, you have upset me, but you have not broken me. And I am going to stand up and I'm going to continue to fight. That's to me what she's saying.
David Sarney, I mean, do you see it the same way? And I know, you know, again, speaking to Phil Ramos yesterday, Las Vegas homicide, speaking to Phil Waters, Houston homicide, they mostly do not believe that she's still with us. But there's some people who watch this who got the sense that maybe the family thinks that she is. How do you see it?
Well, we had the problem. We saw the last video when they were sitting there and we're going to celebrate her and we want her back. We felt that. And is there a chance? The issue has been, they've always said there's an issue medication wise that she needs a medication because if she doesn't get it, there's a chance she may pass away. So that's always been in the mindset of everybody. So hopefully, we're going to hope for the best, but you know, we have to do, the investigators are going to do what they're going to need to do. The reality is, and I think I told this to my students, said this best, when is this over? When you find her. And that's really what it comes down to. When we find her and find the individual, the person or persons that were involved in this entire disastrous investigation, this special category missing person that I see, you're doing what you can. And either if you hope that she's alive, you hope you find her. But what it comes down to, it doesn't end until we do. And that's really what we have to understand about these cases. They don't end until we get the result we want. And the main result is getting her back.
I just want to play out this back half of this so you can hear
it. We believe our mom is still out there. We need your help. Law enforcement is working tirelessly around the clock, trying to bring her home, trying to find her. She was taken and we don't know where. And we need your help. So I'm coming on just to ask you, not just for your prayers, but no matter where you are, even if you're far from Tucson, if you see anything, if you hear anything, if there's anything at all that seems strange to you, that you report to law enforcement. We are in an hour of desperation. And we need your help.
An hour of desperation. Tom Smith, your take on the video, and then I've got another question for you.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. You know, I think it's the perfect, we hit a wall. She's letting you know law enforcement's doing everything they can. And I think this was from the heart. You know, there's no notes, there's no paper, there's nothing written down as, you know, the other ones were, the other videos were. This is straight from her heart about how, you know, hurt they are, but they're not giving up. And I think the doctor's completely right. You know, she's the front one now of the family. You know, she's the most well-known. And she's putting herself out there as, you know, I'm going to tell you she's still all right. We still are okay. We're still looking. But asking for everyone's help is key, you know, and I think it's something that law enforcement's been doing as well. But now you have Savannah doing it, who is well known throughout this country, and showing that, you know, they may be hitting a wall right now and they need a lot of help with this.
Shout out to Judy Herbert, very generous, always donating. Appreciate it, and appreciate the kind words about the coverage. And it takes a team. The COE, chief of everything, my wife, a former CBS News correspondent, Steve Cohen, in charge of booking all the best guests, former CBS News and Fox News guy. And then we got Space Coast on the West Coast handling all the audio and all the technical issues with the show. There can be questions raised about what is called coercion when a search is done. This was something that we addressed earlier. But Dr. Pettler, are you surprised at all here now what appeared to be a firm deadline has come and passed? No one knows it was 5 Eastern, 5 Central, 5 Mountain. 5 Mountain is Tucson time, but that has passed also. Would you have expected maybe, you know, law enforcement to make some sort of comment to maybe even just call a bluff to say, hey, the deadline has come and gone, there was nothing done, yada, yada? Or is the silence from law enforcement on this exactly what you would expect?
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high-stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you can believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep. And man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorites. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flour, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
I think that everything here is their strategy, you know, and their ways of handling situations like this based on their education, training, and experience, which is tremendous in many regards. I don't know what to expect in this particular case, Joel, so I would misspeak to answer your question directly, simply because I don't know exactly what their normal protocol would be in comparison to the circumstances of this case.
Thank you for that. Gray here, she didn't say she believes she's out there alive, just out there. I get that, Gray. And, you know, it's tough. You've got to read her, I guess, which is a challenge in and of itself. And I don't think any of us actually know. Maybe she's fearing that if they give up hope, people won't care or help anymore. That's another really astute point, I think, to make there. David Sarney, I am reluctant to bring this up because this sort of takes this to a sensationalistic level, but it's also reality in this case. So I think it's fair game. And that is the Epstein files were dropped. COE's having a heart attack right now. The Epstein files were dropped. She's set to interview Savannah was a bunch of survivors. You know, he dies under mysterious circumstances at MDC in New York City. I mean, don't authorities have to at least look at this, consider this, because you're considering everything, that maybe this is some high level coordinated plan by some, I don't know, some actors, some bad actors?
It comes back to the same thing. It's like, how do they know she was home? They just decided the moment in time to get to that house and do it. Is that a chance? This is, again, going back to that room where the office is and banging heads. Is that a possibility? Is that a possibility? When you have that question, can you answer with a statement? Right now, anything is possible at this point until you have something concrete. That's why this ransom demand and ransom note has been is in the ether, because so far that's the best thing that anyone has gotten at least to something. something to grasp onto. But we have, remember that there was a van, apparently a white van they're looking at. That kind of walked away. No one talks about the white van going back to Annie's house and doing that. There's so many things going on behind the scenes. This is one that everyone's captured everybody because a ransom note there. It's got to be a ransom note. And the doctor, Tom, again, goes back to my whys. Why wasn't a note made 2 days prior, left at the wasn't made at the residence? Why was it 2 days after the fact? If you're making this hostage attack, if you're kidnapping somebody, and, you know, I've done a lot of burglary, robbery investigations. It's rare you have, nighttime burglars are very dangerous. They want to hit and run and get out. That's their thing. To take her out of a house, and, you know, she's 85 years old. I have a 90-year-old aunt, and she's a little feisty. So you're going to have, will it be one person or more than one person? Is there two people or three people involved? You're going to hear all these things because you have two people. Is a van possible? Yeah, it's possible. Anything is possible until you, but unless you have some concrete fact to support something, you really can go with any supposition, any theory right now.
By the way, I asked Carm about that. My 86-year-old mother, she said she would have gone fighting tooth and nail. She said she would have ripped these guys apart, whoever they are. So don't come after Carm is my message to you. Leo Wren gifting one surviving survivor membership. I agree with Brian here on this, by the way. Disagree with the NBC TMZ take. I mean, I would think that they would go to NBC first, but NBC for sure would fully cooperate with law enforcement, whereas Harvey 11 is saying, hey, I just got this exclusive. I'm putting it out there. NBC would not have done that. Much too corporate, much too formal. They would have literally gone to their own internal security team, and they would have done that before ever just putting it out on the, you know, you imagine Craig Melvin, their morning anchor on the Today Show, just reading that. No way. There's no chance that would ever happen. But Dr. Petler, Layla made an interesting point, and I think you just touched on it a little bit. But in the video we just watched, she's really the last three videos that they put out. And by the way, we're going to put up all four edited together under the YouTube video tab so you guys can watch it. I was going to do it tonight. It just takes too much time, but it'll be up there this evening under the video tab. But Layla makes the point that in this video, Savannah is talking to the audience, not talking to the, you know, the potential perpetrators out there. Did you see it that way? And what do you make of that?
I do see it that way. And I think that these things are interesting because I think that it could be not only is she coming from the heart and it's not scripted where she is talking directly to the public and to her fans and to the audience. But I also think it is reflective of what they are seeing in the personality of the people or person who is potentially generating these messages to TMZ and to other networks. Because when you have a statement like that or these notes coming in, any kind of crime scene in general is always going to be a reflection of the personality of the offender. It's also going to be reflective of the what we call the emotionality or the cognition. And what we're seeing at the end is the result of the behavior. So we're looking for personality traits, we're looking for emotionality and things like that. And I think that speaking directly to other people and taking the attention off of the alleged kidnappers or the people that are actually sending these messages is very powerful because all of a sudden that it's like they're not in control. Savannah's in control. She's asking for help from other people. They're making it a larger army of people that are coming after information. And so for me, I feel like they're really starting to understand elements of the personality of these notes and the psychology behind that. And these videos are starting to be geared toward addressing the observations they're making. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I fully understand this. I'm going to read this one out loud. Thank you, Laura, for that. But meaning of the ransom note sent to local station and that station gave to the sheriff, but didn't report it. Only then another local and TMZ goes public. I'm not sure exactly what the question is, but I do know it did go to KGUN9, some information, and also to KOLD. They handed it off and, you know, to law enforcement, but TMZ took some heat because they, you know, they broadcast it first and then took the steps to get it to law enforcement, or maybe simultaneously took the steps to do that. Since there's been no communication, throw a $5 bill in the account to see if, one, it's a legitimate address, plus it could trigger a response. David Sarney, what about that? Do you put that $5 in there to see if they're like, you got to be kidding me, put in the rest? That's not a bad tactic.
Not a bad ploy. This is why, like I said, even people who aren't normally into this, you're hearing all these things. Are there opportunities to do this? Yeah, it could do anything. But again, it comes back to, does the address, you know, if the address works, is that's what you're looking at? And people are going, well, you can't track Bitcoin, but you can. So there's a lot of, again, it comes back to this to the oddity of this. They send notes to TMZ and then the local networks. You know, that's still kind of unusual. You know, it's been 30 hours. Like some people saying it's 30 hours when it was done. But wouldn't, if you're planning this and you've done this surveillance, would you not have a note available and accessible to leave at the scene? Don't call the police. This is what we have. And if you don't give it to her, give us the money, we're going to end this person's life. That's usually how it's going to go. This seems a lot more drawn out where it was, you know, I don't see a home invasion gone bad. But again, someone is injured. Her blood is out on the scene. What caused that injury? Was it taken from the scene? Was it left at the scene? That's why that crime scene, you know, good, bad, or different, needed to go through it. And they're still going through it a second and third time. So you're still trying to find something. It's shocking that no other forensic evidence or trace evidence that we're aware of has been recovered from that scene. Nothing. I mean, how professional are they to wait for 36 hours, how many hours it is, to then send a ransom note, not to one network, but then to two and then the third network, because you didn't get a response the first time? I think if you're really planning this and you did the surveillance, you did all the victimology, you're going to do this quick, out. They take the camera, they moved it wherever that camera is, maybe went to the septic tank, did they take it with them? That's why that search had to be that's why that crime scene had to go through with a fine tooth comb. And it's a possibility that she left the house. We've said that before. Could there be an instance where she got disoriented and left? Hopefully that grid search was able to prove negative, because how far could she walk without her walking cane? All of these things are being played out. And that goes back to ask the question, answer it with a fact.
Great point. If this is a kidnapping, again, proof of life, wouldn't they send a lock of hair? To David Sarney's point and to Tom Smith's point, we could sit here from now either till eternity, but hopefully just till this case is solved, which hopefully is much sooner than eternity, postulating and asking us a million different questions. Trekking here with an interesting super chat. Maybe I've just watched too many Dr. Phil Scamfish episodes, but I picture all these quote unquote ransom messages originating from cubicles in Lagos, Nigeria, which, by the way, we have members watching there. So shout out to Lagos, Nigeria, and hope you're not sending fake ransom notes the way the Guthries. That would be awful. Tom Smith. Another thing, again, I don't want to harp or give Harvey Levin more, clicks than he deserves, maybe. But they got some information on this, quote unquote, crypto wallet. And they were reporting today, no money has been put in there. Now, these crypto wallets are basically set up and done correctly, completely anonymously. But are there ways, I mean, you worked in concert so much with the FBI, are there ways still to track a person to a crypto wallet, even if it was done anonymously? I just don't know.
You know what? We didn't deal with any of that, but I would find it very hard to believe that something is completely untraceable. I would find that hard to believe with the technology that's out there today. And not only the FBI, but what other agencies the FBI can tap into to assist them with this wouldn't have the technology to have their hand in that one way or another, either deposits, withdrawals, all of that. I think there would be some sort of way to track it. I can't see something being completely untraceable.
Yeah, everyone is emphasizing this today, by the way. Someone has that one piece of information that can help us bring Nancy home. We need that person to share what they know. And it's nothing is too small. You don't want to bother them with your thoughts about the case, which Pima County already has put out a press release. But if you see something and it's nagging at you, you've got to call the FBI or the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Dr. Pettler, you know, if you got called in on this, if they said, hey, we need Laura Pettler here, we don't know what to do at this point, how would you advise law enforcement right now?
Joel, as you know, we use something that I invented called the murder room method, and it's a 6-stage method that takes a case from literally when officers pull up on the scene all the way through evaluation at the very end. So in our situation, what we would do in this particular case is use that method. We would adapt it a bit because it's designed to work other types of cases, but we would adapt it and adjust it so that it could work a case like this. And going to what David was saying about when you have a question, you have to support it with a fact. Anything that we can prove about the victim or the crime scene, we write on green paper and we put it up on the wall. And then anything that we can sort of prove, we put it on yellow paper, we put it on the wall. And then anything in red is going to be things that we can't prove yet. But it doesn't mean those things aren't important, Joel. It means those things are important, but we just don't have facts, something that is valid and reliable, the two pillars of what we need to make something admissible in court, so to speak. We put them in red. And so that gives us an idea of where our case is strong, where our case is weak. We follow that with a 7-stage timeline. The timeline has 7 pieces to it. And because we primarily work homicide here, it starts out with what we call the macro timeline, and we use the milestones. So in Nancy Guthrie's case, we would be tracking, you know, when did she move into that house? When did she join the St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church? How long has she been a member there? When did that pastor take over? And the reason that church is important to me is because she became missing on a Saturday night where she then could not attend church the next morning. And so for me, that is something that has to be further investigated because it's basically preventing her from doing something in her normal routine activity. So then we take it all the way down to what we call perimortem, and then we blow it back out all the way to post-macro, which is after the death of a victim, in our case, because we work homicide. So we also have numerous matrices that within the murder room system that can be adapted to test all the evidence, but we keep in mind that the core of this entire process is the victimology. So we compare and contrast everything we get in and everything that's on the walls in green, yellow, and red back to that victim. And we use that victim as the map. And we solve 98% of the cases that we work with the murder room method. But again, it is a homicide investigation method. It isn't for ransom cases like this.
I've got to ask you, besides being brilliant, I mean, how long did it take you to devise this? How did you come up with this? What was the impetus for this?
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now and whether or not you're going to believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep. And man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorite. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, Not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
I've been in the field 30 years. I've been in homicide. This is my 25th year. And I published the first version of it, wrote it in 2014, and it published in my book, Crime Scene Staging Dynamics and Homicide Cases. It published the very first version of it in that particular book, which was published like 2016, I think, is the actual date of publication on that book. So it's grown since then. And so, like, for example, I can show you a document that we have here that we're using in this case. And you can see how thick this is. This is a lot of paper. This is 30 pages. And this is called Petler's Research-Based Forensic Victimology. And it's based on it's based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And we study the victim. And by the time we get to step three of the victimology process, Joel, we can typically identify where the victim may have been in conflict with someone else. Now, in Nancy Guthrie's case, the conflict could be something as simple as contact. It doesn't necessarily mean that she has a relationship with someone where they're trying to solve a problem by making her disappear or harming her permanently or something of that nature. So we study the victim using that, and overall, the system has been in development probably for more than 10 years. But every time I develop a new matrix, we incorporate it into the system and flesh it out. So you can work robbery cases with it. You can work child abuse and things like that. Like I said, if I were called in on this case, I would literally have to learn what's going on, and then I would literally adapt the method and build and invent any other matrices that were necessary to work this case and make it successful.
Wow. David Sarney, incredibly impressive. The murder room system using green, yellow, and red color coding. You know, at the NYPD, if you're working this, and I have a sense because New York's old school and crazy, I just imagine a whiteboard with a bunch of nutty New Yorkers racing around, racing, writing, screaming at each other. But how do you guys do it behind the scenes without the green, yellow, red coated booklets here?
Wow, we're not getting colored paper in New York. Forget that. That's going to be a difficult. Maybe colored markers. You got to understand, the police department, we are great. Our resources when it comes to that. And Tom would remember back when we did, when homicides were major cases, they'd have an easel. Yeah. That's how we used to do it, with an easel. And there would be a big thing. You write paper down. You put down what you did, what you need to do. That's what they do. It's now that way. We have electronic case management with the NYPD now. But what you're doing is the same thing. You're doing putting things on a board. You're seeing what your teams are doing. Okay, I got a team going out doing the canvases of these streets, these locations. The other team is going on the leads that we got in this morning. What are we going to do? All the day tour will get their assignments. They come back, the 4 to 12 would come in, or the 4 to 1 would come in, and then continue the assignments that way, especially these large cases like these type of high-profile, a murder investigation, a multiple homicide, anything that's a big case you would do that with when you have that availability. I color-coded my cases, and when paper cases existed. Paper doesn't exist anymore in New York, as far as NYPD is concerned. It's a lot of computer, and that's an issue when it comes to case management. So you have to have a lead in this case, and they got to sit there with all the paperwork and go through what we've done, what we're looking to do. And the updates have to come in, and then has to be continuous communication with the day tour to the 4 to 1 tour. And if it's a midnight tour to do it, they have the midnight tour. Everyone's got to be on board. Paperwork gets submitted to reports get submitted to the case detective or a person who's filing all of that, going through it. So then the case detective comes in. After doing all they're doing, is now they have to look and evaluate all that paperwork that's come in.
Mm. Wow. Back to the ransom for a moment. That's absolutely fascinating. And I love hosting the show because I learn every time I'm on this show. But Tom Smith, to you, just back to the notion, everyone is saying the deadline has come and passed and no ransom has been paid. It made me wonder, how the hell would we know? Maybe it was paid. When would we know if it was paid? We wouldn't know right away, right?
You're not going to know right away because it depends on the next step. you know, and we're not going to be privy to that. It depends on if it is paid, is there a follow-up instruction? Okay, we got it. Now we're doing this. They're not going to put that out there because that is all super sensitive and operational information that they're not going to put out there. So one leads to another. It's not just as simple as, okay, they paid it. Great. Tell everybody. There's going to be follow-ups that you don't want to, you know, screw something up, you know, and come on the air or come on the news and release something that they don't want out there. You know, there's got to be anything to not jeopardize this case because of what it entails. And someone's life is on the line. And one small little thing that's said in public or someone goofs up and jumps the gun can cost, you know, a victim, someone who's being kidnapped or held, their life. And can jeopardize the investigation. So it all depends on what the follow-up is to that. One of the things I just want to add, Joel, real quick on Dave, and he's going to know this, just, again, old school stuff. And I don't know if this took place with this case yet, but we used to actually have clean teams come in too. So you get guys who have never seen a piece of paper about this case before from either close jurisdictions or just other people that haven't seen this paperwork, and have them go through it to get a different opinion, different eyes on it. Because Dave, we all know, Laura knows too, you know, you start looking at the same thing over and over again and it gets clouded and you just start saying the same thing over and over again and it doesn't go anywhere. If you get this team in completely clean, you get new ideas and you'd be amazed on what one or two people can go, hey, did you look at this? And you have a room full of people look at them, go, oh, wow, no. Okay, yeah, let's go. And that might be the big break.
Yeah, David Sarney, I mean, the question was back up, and someone's laughing at TMZ, tracking and tracing Bitcoin accounts, but which might be laughable, actually. But do you have any idea, Tom took a shot at it, but is Bitcoin traceable from your understanding? And if so, how long would it take to track it?
That's the issue, the length of time. Bitcoin, there are ways in which Bitcoin can be traced. The amount of time, the amount of the ability to do so, that's the issue. How long can it take? We've seen this. Technology is great. Technology can be traced. Technology can be tracked to an extent. How long that would take? Again, I'm not a cryptocurrency guy. I know a little bit about it, but because I'm losing money in it. But with crypto in general, yeah, it's been horrible. With crypto in general, the thing is, the $6 million in Bitcoin drops anyway. So why would you not get a value some other way of doing that? There's a lot of things that are questionable. You know, Bitcoin goes up, goes down. It's like 69,000 per Bitcoin, something like that, or 70,000. I don't know. But can it be traced? Probably easier than other cryptocurrency could be traced. That's the one thing.
Here we go. Bitcoin wallets are public. The wallet address that was in the first letter is checkable publicly if you have the address. Yeah, but it's all a numerical thing, and I'm not a math science guy. But the bottom line is, it's possible to be anonymous, I suppose. But Dr. Pettler, I'm curious. Staging isn't a huge factor here, but in your experience, stage crimes, or if this is like a fake kidnapping, is it? What's the rationale behind it from the perpetrator's perspective? Is it to conceal who did it or when it was done or how it was done? Is there a specific reason people stage?
That's a great question, Joel. And to be honest with you, I mean, I haven't ruled out staging in this particular case. And so it's still on the table for me just because that's my area of expertise. But let's get into staging and what it is and what it isn't. First of all, staging is a function of the victim-offender relationship. If there is no relationship between the victim and offender, where the offender is going to be the most likely named person as the primary suspect, there's no reason to stage. And staging is for the purpose of misdirecting an investigation. So you can have staging in all kinds of cases. Of course, you can have them in homicide cases, but you can have staging in other types of cases like robberies or sexual assaults or anything else. So staging is, I personally break it down into a taxonomy, which I published a few years ago. And it breaks staging down into visual staging, which is what we see at the scene. So that's the tampering of physical evidence and how it's manipulated before law enforcement arrives for the purpose of misdirecting their investigation right there off the bat. And then we have something called linguistic staging, which also encompasses not only the oral statements that are given to detectives like Tom and David, but also cyber staging. And that would encompass like a note like this being sent to TMZ or something like a voicemail being left or an email being sent, something like that. Then we have gestural staging. Gestural staging is the body language of the stager and how they use proximity, how they use time, and how they use space and all of these things. So, you know, homicide is pretty easy. You know, homicide is typically conflict resolution for an offender or it's fantasy driven. So when we're talking about homicide in general or why something happens, you can usually take it back to a trigger. And then that trigger, it basically activates an emotion. And then that that emotion ignites a thought. And then that thought results in the behavior. So I think when you're talking about the red flags of staging and the fact that people are questioning whether these ransom notes or are they actually ransom notes or these messages, let's say they're messages, are they actually ransom notes? Are they actually authentic or are they staged? You can compare it against known matrices of staging behavior and look for those red flags and then determine whether or not you are checking the boxes in the taxonomy and moving it forward. Right now, this case, you know, for me, if you're using the murder room method, there is so much red on the walls. There's very, very, very little green. There's some yellow and there's tremendous amounts of red paper all over the walls, which tells you that your case is not strong and that there's a tremendous opportunity for further investigation into the staging elements to determine whether it's a stage case or it's normal, which is, you know, the way that we describe them here, whether it's stage would be that it's manipulated or normal would mean that it's just like something that's just like straight up. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the staging elements, I don't think they should be taken off the table at this point.
Wow. So interesting. Kim Young, I'm not in law enforcement, but I am fascinated by crime. Just bought Laura's book. She sounds like a smart cookie. A smart cookie understatement right there. Love her. She's doing all this without power the last 6 days, everybody. Imagine her with power, the power that she would bring.
And water.
And water, yeah. Tom Smith, let's look at this photo. I brought it up for a second. This now is being reported by Michael Ruiz, Fox News Digital, who's among the best out there. This camera was up during the week last week and was just he just noticed that it was taken down. He has a before and after shot. It was taken down real recently, probably in the last 48 hours. When this first came up, it sounded to me, and there's been a lot of misinformation, like this is a camera that investigators had missed and that maybe it wasn't even installed by the Guthries. I don't know where that stands, but I don't know. What would prompt law enforcement to physically remove a camera that far into, you know, maybe 6-7 days into its investigation?
Well, first of all, let me say following Laura is really hard with any question you get now. You know, so...
Yeah.
You got to really be on your game, you know, before it goes before you. But taking that camera might just be what I just explained. You know, someone else looked at something and said, hey, looked at a picture of the crime scene, looked at other pictures, say, hey, where's that camera? Or go get that camera. You know, it could be something as simple as that, that you have just other people who are noticing things after a group of men and women been looking at it sideways for 9 days. You know, so it could be very simple. That's why you have many people involved in a case like this, because you need different eyes. You need different opinions. You need different tactics. You know, everyone's got different tactics and different ways to do investigations. And you hope they all come together, you know, for you know, the common goal of getting this done. But this is probably just one of those instances that someone noticed it and it came to light and someone just said, hey, someone's got to get out there and grab it, on top of the other things as well that are out there. Or it could have been a family member bringing it to their attention and saying, hey, you know, we have a camera on the side of the house. Did you grab that? And they didn't notice it. You know, you go back to crime scenes sometimes, you know, to make sure you got everything, or because of a tip that came in, or, you know, another detective or investigator or DA came up with the idea. So that's why you go back, and that might just be this.
There's more information from the FBI that Michael Ruiz just posted. Let me read this to you guys out loud as I'm getting it here. For more than a week, FBI agents, analysts, and professional staff have worked around the clock to reunite Nancy Guthrie with her family. The FBI is not aware of any continued communication between the Guthrie family and suspected kidnappers, nor have we identified a suspect or person of interest in this case at this time. Additional personnel from the FBI field offices across the nation continue to deploy to Tucson. We are currently operating a 24-hour command post that includes crisis management experts, analytic support, and investigative teams, but we still need the public's help. Someone has that one piece of information that can help us bring Nancy home. We need that person to share what they know. Please call us at 1-800-CALL-FBI. Man, I have never seen anything like this. Dr. Pettler, it's pretty obvious reading this, and I have not come up with the murder room system, nor do I use red and other color-coordinated papers, but I can tell you it sounds like they've hit a wall here. How do you read this?
I guess it's fair to say I'm a pretty high-stress guy because I worry about absolutely everything, including this very ad that I'm reading right now, and whether or not you can believe me and go out and buy this amazing product. But there's a company that ships federally legal THC right to your doorstep, and man, they are discreet. And yes, I'm talking about mood.com. And among their gummies, two of them are my favorites. Sleepy Time Advanced Gummies does exactly that. When you're up and you're tossing and turning at night, you take a Sleepy Time gummy, boom, you are out cold. And then next, COE, Carm, sorry, but it's true. Sexual Euphoria Advanced Gummies, they help in the bedroom. They help a lot. But if you're not into gummies, there are other options. You've got flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and yes, even beverages. And despite what you've heard in the news, THC products such as Moods are still federally legal to buy online. And best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but listeners get 20% off their first order with code STS.
I'm just rereading it one more time.
No, take your time.
You know, I think that they are definitely asking for additional help. And I think Savannah said the same thing. We're in a desperate hour, and, they want people to know that there is no suspect or person of interest in the case. Wow. This is a very strange case, and I think everybody here would agree. I think all of your viewers would agree. It's a very, very interesting, strange case. And for the FBI to come out and say this, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure Tom and David, you know, they have a lot more experience with the FBI than I do. But for me, I think that they are definitely asking for the public's help. But it's also interesting to me that they're doing this way, because this is going to have an emotional effect on these alleged kidnappers or whoever's involved. The emotional effect that switching gears and being like, you know what, we're going to focus now. We're going to shift gears, and like, we're not going to pay as much attention to you, and we're going to pay more attention to the general public and working with them. And it's like shifting the attention off of this person or these people. That's going to be triggering, and they may be watching for what the result of that trigger is. So like I just was talking about with homicide and how murder happens, it's very simple. You know, murder is simple for the most part. But in this case, it's like, okay, if they're watching this go on, Joel, And they're like, wait a second. I'm not the center of attention. I'm no longer the center of attention. Nobody's paying any attention to me. What am I going to do now? That is basically creating this scenario, this emotional response. It's igniting that emotion, which then creates and activates that thought. And then that results in a behavior, and that behavior could be mappable, trackable, and measurable based on what the FBI is doing. And they're looking for that next piece. And so, you know, it may just be kind of like, well, you know what? We're going to shift gears a little bit and see what you do.
Yeah, I think Tom wants to jump in there real quick, though. Dr. Pettler, back to you. I mean, in your 30-year history of working, you know, crimes and being a criminologist and all this, is there any other case that resembles this? I mean, is this really an extreme outlier?
No, there's no case for me personally that this relates to. And we've got a few thousand here to compare it to. And no, we have them in both paper form and in digital form. And we do not. And we do sometimes have staged missing persons. I mean, we are very familiar with staged missing persons. But those cases are not actual kidnappings. They're not actual missing people. They're actually staged domestic violence homicides staged as a missing person. For example, like Lacey Peterson, in that case, that was an actual homicide case, but it was staged as a missing person, or Susan Powell, or cases like that. So no, for me, I cannot say that I've ever seen this before. This is, you know, ransom notes are not my particular area of expertise.
Best guess in true crime. It is not a tagline. It is our reality. We bring you the best guess in true crime every single night of the week. We do these shows live Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, and off Fridays, 1 o'clock with my mom, a Holocaust survivor, a.k.a. also a licensed therapist, a.k.a. Carm, my mom. So if you don't know, now you know. Please like and subscribe. Tom Smith, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah, just real quick. Laura is so on point with the way the FBI works. And I guarantee you that statement that was released went through 20 drafts and a room full of people came up with that. And the other reason for that is the FBI doesn't release something like that without a plan. They didn't just sit around and went, you know what? We're at a dead end. We don't know where we're going. Let's just tell everyone that. That's not the case.
Do they have a, Tom, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Do they have a profiler in that room who's working on this with, yeah, many. Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Explain the process, if you don't mind, about how the FBI would release a statement like this.
Oh, I just said that is a room full of people, Zoom calls, you know, video calls of other people who want to jump in and add a line or make sure you put it this way or make sure you read it this way. That statement was a process. That didn't just get thrown together in an hour. That was a long time. And like I said, there's a reason for it. They don't do anything, especially that, because you don't see not only police departments, the FBI is not going to come out and go, hey, we're stuck. You know, that's it. And I think Laura's right on target with there's a reasoning behind it of drawing someone out and saying, hey, you know, what are you doing? Did you forget about me? Hello, remember me? And that might prompt something for going. The other thing that I want to bring up, just to that point, if there's more than one person involved in this, you want one annoyed. You maybe want one ticked off a little bit, and that prompts something to, hey, I'm not getting caught up in this anymore. You know, they're going after you or whatever might be the case. So there's always a reason for a statement like that being released.
Wow. So if you guys don't find this fascinating, you probably shouldn't be watching the show, which is something I shouldn't be saying, but it's true. This is incredibly fascinating to me. Laura, if you can, and I'm getting back to David, in terms of a profiler, I know that's not your world, but I'm sure you've worked with profilers. How would they begin to fame? We had Ann Burgess on, who basically created the science last week.
Yeah.
But how do you begin to create this profile here? What are the first questions you're asking?
No, this is all coming back from the investigation.
David, hang on, I'm sorry. I wanted Laura to jump in, and then we'll have you jump in.
Oh, no problem. Okay. Oh, unfortunately, I have a pressing matter. I have to go. I just didn't want to tell you that. I appreciate it. I'm sorry. I can't. No. I got something going on in this house. That one of my cats is doing something evil.
Okay. Right. No worries.
I'll talk to you. Be safe, and everybody. And I've learned a lot tonight. Trust me.
Thank you, David. Only a New Yorker would be that honest. I love it. But what about a profiler here, Laura Pettler? How do they get cracking to try to figure this one out?
You know, they use lots of different things, and they can use crime scene characteristics. Of course, they're going to use the core of everything, which is the victimology. So the victimology combined with crime scene characteristics, also combined with, in homicide cases, we use what's called homicidal pattern. Homicidal pattern is then also brought together with crime scene dynamics, crime scene characteristics, victimology, homicidal pattern. All of that will culminate into offender characteristics. And, you know, a lot of behavior when it comes to crimes like this, it's either anger-based or power-based. Of course, you know, power, it can be related to money. And so they're going to be trying to figure out what is the interest level? Like what is it that about this particular victim that made her, of course, she's a low risk victim. And that's obvious, you know, because she's 84 years old, and she has a routine activity. She's very predictable. So she actually is a low risk victim of becoming a victim of violent crime, but then she becomes a victim of violent crime. But she's also challenged to manage if you have kidnapped her. So like she has to have medication. She is not able to walk around that well. There's a lot of things that you're going to have to do to take care of her. And so it's like they're going to be looking at what kind of person would do something like this, and using the crime scene, using the time of day, using the date, using all the digital technology, the dynamics, the characteristics, the victimology, the suspectology, which of course that suspectology is started, but they have to use all of this psychology. And for me as a criminologist, Joel, what that means, forensic criminology is the combination of analyzing the physical evidence, behavioral evidence, and cultural evidence, and marrying those things together, making that into a mosaic. So that the profilers are going to be doing something similar to that, but in a little different way. And they're going to be using all those pieces, all the pieces of the pie, to put something together to develop a list of potential traits, personality traits, emotionality traits, behaviors, how they think. They're going to be trying to predict all those kinds of things. And behavior is very purposeful, Joel. Behavior is very purposeful, unless it's like you're a person that is suffering from psychosis or you have some type of a mental health dissociative disorder where reality is not where it's not intact for you. Behavior is very, very purposeful, and it's mappable, trackable, and measurable, and it's extremely predictable. The best predictor of future behavior is past behavior.
Wow. Just a couple more quick questions, and we'll get final thoughts here. A lot of people are asking, and I assume the reason is because maybe they think she's alive and maybe they don't think she's nearby. But Tom Smith, how come we haven't seen any search parties or someone like Equisearch brought in? And, you know, I work there. I know this area very well. You know, it's treacherous terrain. Nothing is more difficult terrain, I don't think, than the desert, and it's unrelenting. But why no search parties?
That's a great question. And I don't know why, you know. And you would get people from that area who know the area. You know, you talk about the terrain and what it entails. If you have people from that area looking around there, they're going to know how to maneuver there. They're going to know certain spots maybe to look in, maybe a drop off, you know, a certain area. There's a lot to do with that. And that's a great point. You haven't seen that one bit with this, whereas every other case, even on your show, Joel, that we've sat here and talked about, we've seen search parties, we've seen people on horses, on, you know, ATVs, on everything going around areas. And that's not happening here, which, again, another oddity when it comes to this case.
Yeah. And Tom Smith, I haven't heard from Warren Williams anything mentioned about what might be in Nancy's will or her life insurance beneficiaries that would gain from her death. You've always got to ask, what does someone gain from this crime? I've got to assume that on day nine, Pima County sheriffs, the FBI know that backward and forward.
That was probably done on day one, I'm sure, you know, with everything to do with everyone's, that inner circle of people in the family. There was a deep dive into everything they do. Laura talked about victimology. That also extends, and Laura, tell me if I'm wrong, to the extended family as well, because that can lead to what happened, you know, not just the victim, but, you know, the other family members as well. And I'm sure that was one of the first things that were done with emails, social media, wills, everything imaginable was checked in, start in, and then they work out.
I should know this, Dr. Pretler. I know that Tom Smith hosts Gold Shields, and I saw a few people subscribe. You should subscribe to the channel. But Laura Pettler, anything you want us to plug on your end before we get some final thoughts?
You know, I don't do a whole lot of podcasts, Joel, but I do get on my YouTube channel and do something called True Crime and Equines, which is when I bring my horses into the barn and I groom them and talk about true crime. And people love to watch the horses and watch them go from muddy to clean, and they get to interact. The horses interact with the camera. And so I've done that a few times on YouTube, and it's not an official podcast or anything, but I just enjoy it. And I'm standing there in my barn like I normally do, grooming horses, talking about crime. I mean, that's normal for me. and so just wanted to mention something about the searches. I'm the deputy coroner commander of the Lancaster County Coroner's Office Mounted Response Unit. And we
why doesn't
are,
that surprise me? That does not surprise me at all. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. It goes right with me, right? Because it combines death investigation with horses. And you're asking, you know, why do we not see this? You know, one reason is because there aren't a whole lot of mounted units across the country, but there are some. There are some. We're the first coroner's office based unit in the United States, death investigation mounted unit. But, you know, sometimes they don't actually call those kinds of searches in. And so, like, we aren't going to just self deploy. So, like, why we don't see Texas and why we don't see these other, like, even as the LCCO MRU, we have to be deployed by, in response to a law enforcement agency calling our coroner and saying, hey, you know, can the MRU come out? You know what I mean? So, like, we're not going to self-deploy. So I think that's part of the reason we don't see some of these units responding, is because they don't self-deploy either.
Yeah. Well, I always say this. We are a pet-friendly, dog and cat-friendly, but we're definitely horse-friendly as well. Hey. Love horses. I absolutely love. I love, no offense to everyone watching, but I prefer real animals over human animals any day of the week. So no offense, but it is the truth. So I'll have to check that out. If you don't know Tom Smith, now you do. Retired NYPD detective. Also, a huge shout out to David Sarney, who has three cats, all named after mob characters, which is hilarious. And it sounds like one of them was destroying something, so he had to run. But Tom Smith, a host of Gold Shields, check it out. I mean, if there was, and it sounds like there is not, but if there were a prime suspect right now, how would things be different? And your final thoughts?
You know what? It might not be a lot different, because if they're looking at one particular person, they're certainly not going to talk about it. You know, so they may be, you know, leaning towards someone, and there might have been someone on their radar from the beginning of this, but it's not just developing the way they want it to. You know, the biggest thing you always want to do, and I think all three of us hit it in the beginning of the show, you have to walk in there with every option on the table and everything, and as an open mind. You can't paint yourself into a corner, because then things go really wrong. Even to the length that this is going, you still have to keep every option open because you don't want to get blindsided by something. You want to be prepared for it if it does come out of left field, which I could see something like that happening here too. Just something popping up that no one's talked about, no one's briefed about. I could see something like that just popping up one of these days, hopefully leading to a successful conclusion to this, but everything has to be on the table and everyone is probably still to this day a suspect.
Yeah. Thank you to Tom Smith, Copper Horse, one of our amazing mods from New Jersey, my home state. Dr. Laura Petler, forensic criminologist. Check out her YouTube channel. It's right there. Give her some love. And you see Christy just, I don't know if she's up to our show, but make sure you got to sub to Gold Shields and to Dr. Petler's as well. Dr. Petler, really fascinating insight, and I hope you will come back, and I hope you get power back really soon.
Thank you. Yeah,
I've got to say one thing. As a media guy, which is about the only thing I know, it's really amazing to me. This news cycle has lasted a very long time. It has been going strong now into day 9. If you think about almost anything, it's got like, if you're lucky to have a 2 or 3 day news cycle, and I'm talking about like a news cycle that is front and center of every major media outlet. And this story is, it's really unlike anything I've seen in recent years. So I hope there is a resolution. But Dr. Petler, final question. I mean, how surprised are you 9 days in and it appears that there are zero leads or at least substantive leads in this case, in your final thoughts?
I actually believe there's lots of leads, and I think there are a lot of things that are going on behind the scenes that we aren't going to know about, as we should not know about them. And at some point when they can share what's gone on, what's going on, and what will go on, they will. But I think there's lots of things happening, and I'm just hoping for the Guthrie family that Nancy has returned safely very, very soon. And I know that everybody is doing everything they can to make that happen.
We all echo those thoughts. Please, Nancy Guthrie, get back home. Our thoughts and prayers are with Savannah, her siblings, and of course, Nancy Guthrie. And I know they're a family of deep faith. So I hope that the prayers, and I know they will work. Continue to follow us. For showtimes, I'm on Twitter at Podcast STS or X, whatever you prefer, at Podcast STS. On Instagram at Surviving Survivor. Don't be surprised if we don't do 2 shows tomorrow, maybe 2 shows Wednesday. I didn't tell the COE that. She'll be thrilled to hear that. But I think there's ways to expand this, and there is an insatiable appetite right now for this story, which is very unique. So on that note, love you, America. Love you. Are you North Carolina? North Carolina, right, Laura? North Carolina, yeah, North Carolina, Carolina. New York, New York, and of course, Tucson, Arizona. Let's get Nancy Guthrie home. Laura and Tom, stick around 1 second.